Hello, and welcome to Holden Village. Today is Monday, August 12th, 2002. Today's session is titled, The U.S. Army School of the Americas. Is the United States training terrorists? Presented by Peter Thompson. The tape number is THP-2002-08. Let's listen in.
I think it's entitled, Is the United States Training Terrorists? My name is Peter Thompson. I'm a long-term staff person here at Holden for two more days, and then I'm moving back to Minneapolis. And so this is my last session. I've been doing a session on various peace and justice issues all year. I've worked at the village here part of the time in carpentry, part of the time in the resource center, which is a room right adjacent to the library and kind of adjunct to the library, where we look at different issues that are related to Christian ethics and morals and values and peace and justice. How many people here know what the School of the Americas is, or have heard of School of the Americas Watch? How many people have actually been involved, gone down there in November, or have heard about some of the actions, the annual protest that's down there? There's about 10,000 people come together every year for this protest, so that was interesting. Well, I'll give a little background on School of the Americas and School of the Americas Watch, and then I have a video. This is a new video that's just come out, and it's called The New Patriots. And it talks about some of the people who have been opposing the School of the Americas and the training of Latin American soldiers there, and goes through their background. Some of them are the ones that are featured, were in the military, and you know, now they're basically opposing something the military does, because the U.S. Army down at Fort Benning in this particular school trains Latin American soldiers in various things, basically soldiering kinds of things, combat and infantry and interrogation and counterinsurgency, resistance and things like that. A little bit of history before we watch the video is the school started back in the late 40s in Panama with the expressed idea that it would foster communications between our military and the militaries in Latin America, with the stated purpose that those militaries would become more professional and would help to support democracies and stability in civilian governments in Latin America. And as probably all of you know, that there has been many, many years of coups and military-dominated governments and anything but true democracies in a lot of the governments down in Central America and South America. So the students to this school basically have come from South and Central America. In 1984, the school was tossed out of Panama because the government there said it is the biggest destabilizers of democracy in the hemisphere, and they called it the School of Coups, after coup d'etat. So the Army, which financed the school, U.S. Army, moved the school to Fort Benning, where it's been about for the last 20 years. If you think back to those early 80s, that's when a lot of issues about politics and human rights and religious workers were very active in El Salvador and in Nicaragua and in some of the countries down there. On November 19th of 1989, six Jesuit priests their housekeeper and her daughter were assassinated at the University of San Salvador. It was a time when there was some fairly major fighting going on between the government forces, many of whom had been trained at the School of Americas, and the rebels, the FMLN, which were the insurgent groups down in El Salvador at the time. That conflict, probably 5 years later, got resolved, and it resulted in part, this resolution was the UN had a truth-finding mission, not unlike what they also had done in South Africa. And they took testimony, and they had immunities, and they identified people, and they published a report. And in that report, they found that the assassins of the six Jesuit priests and the two women, the majority of them were trained at the Army School of the Americas. Hey, Winston and Elspeth. These are friends of mine from home. I didn't know they were here, and we're going back. We'll beat you back to Minneapolis. They then looked further and looked back at the assassination of Archbishop Romero in 1980 and found that the majority of the assassins of Romero were also trained at the Army School of Americas. They then looked at the murder and rape of four nuns that was also taking place about that time and found that the majority of those perpetrators were also trained at the Army School of the Americas. Then they started looking at some of the lists of graduates and found that Manuel Noriega had been trained there, and Hugo Banzer, the dictator of Bolivia, had been trained there, and Roberto de Abusin, the leader of the Death Squad Party in El Salvador, had been trained there, and the list tended to go on and on. Then looking forward, they started looking at who was being trained at this school in more recent times, and there was a very definite correlation between places that were experiencing insurgencies and gross human rights abuses had the majority of the people who were being trained at the School of the Americas. And so they've continued to make these links between the School of the Americas and assassinations, kidnappings, disappearances, and other human rights abuse with people trained at the School of the Americas. As a result, a man named Father Roy Bourgeois began, he was a Maronil priest and knew a couple of the people that had been murdered down there, began protesting the fact that the United States Army had this training camp for whom he viewed as terrorists. And he ended up forming this movement called School of the Americas Watch. And this movement has an annual protest down at the gates of Fort Benning. The village allowed four of us to go down there this past year and attend. And more than a political rally, it's a lot more like a religious procession. That is, there are many religious people that are there from many denominations. It's sort of Catholic based, but there are UCC people there and Lutheran people there and all sorts of other people. And it's basically a solemn funeral procession where each year the funerals of the six Jesuits and the two women are reenacted by a conscientious going on to the base. You may see this in the video, which is constitutes trespassing. Thereafter, a select number of the people who go onto the base, sometimes it's been as high as 5,000 people, are selected for prosecution for trespassing on the base. And kind of that's where I came in. I met Father Bourgeois when he was in Minnesota. I'm a criminal defense lawyer and a human rights lawyer, and I have been defending the people down there for the last 12 years. Except for this year, when I was at Holden. And this year, the trials just got over, and numerous of the people were sentenced. I think there were about 35 defendants this year, many of them religious, either priests, nuns, or religious lay workers have been sentenced to between 3 and 6 months in federal prison and fined for trespassing on the base. So that's a little background. I'd like to show the video now, and I'd like to have you keep in mind, I don't talk much during these sessions. This has been unusual. I like to hear people's opinions and engage in free interchange of ideas. But as you watch it, the title of this video is The New Patriots. And this video came out after September 11th, as you can tell from the contents of the video. And I would like you to keep in mind, and I'd like to ask you when we come back to think about patriotism. I think the idea of the video is that these people who formerly served in the military now are opposing the military. Is that now unpatriotic? What is patriotism? Is patriotism a good or a bad thing, in your opinion, either throughout history or right now? There's a tremendous swell of patriotism right now in this country with all the flags around, and I don't know how many people have really talked about what is patriotism. And the dictionary, we had a debate here about 3 months ago, and one of the participants was smart enough to bring the dictionary, and in that particular dictionary, he gave the definition of patriotism as two things, equal definitions. One, love of country, and two, a zealous advocacy of national interests. So two kind of different looks at the thought of patriotism. So if there are any questions, we can do that a little bit, or we can look at the video and then have a discussion about School of the Americas and what ideas and questions and positions this raises for you. Okay, would you, right after I push the start button, I'll holler, and if you can get that. There it is, it's playing out. You can get that. I think all three of those need to go on. Very good.
Started out duty, honor, country. I liked the idea of being of service to my country. I liked integrity. The duty, the honor, the responsibility. That's why people joined the military, rather the majority anyway, not to go off to kill people, but because they want to defend the Constitution. They want to defend democracy. And I was idealistic, like the rest of my classmates.
I was a naval officer. I volunteered for shore duty in Vietnam. I went there believing our cause was noble, as so many of us did. Vietnam was a turning point in my life. It was in Vietnam for the first time that I began to question my country's foreign policy.
I unfortunately was pretty ignorant and uninformed as a young person. I simply joined the military to get the money to finish college. And I have changed from being a knee-jerk patriot who supports whatever I'm told should be done by my leaders. And then I have changed to being an informed critic.
This is 18 minutes, the video.
On the morning of 7 December 1967, Company A came under intense fire. Chaplain Charles Lipke began moving upright through the enemy fire, administering last rites to the dying and evacuating the wounded. It was discovered that Captain Lipke had personally carried 20 men to the landing zone for evacuation during the Sabbath fighting.
These soldiers.
Captain Lipke received the Congressional Medal of Honor. The first chaplain to receive that honor as a live soldier since the Civil War.
And respect.
Political consciousness was not really raised until I had gone to Mexico and El Salvador. As a matter of fact, I wasn't even aware that we were involved in the war in El Salvador.
I served in South Korea, and there had been a coup in 1979, US-backed, and a new puppet regime had been installed. Obviously, not all Koreans were happy about that, and more than 2,000 of them were mowed down, killed by Korean troops. And it blew over rather quickly, and I didn't think much more about it. But it certainly planted the seeds in my mind and in my heart. It is so very much like the horrors all over Central and South America.
Patriotism, I don't feel, is just blind going off to a country and believing their leaders. No, it's looking for the truth. It's really asking some hard questions.
Just a couple miles beyond this fence, there's Global Combat School that trains every year hundreds of soldiers from Latin America. It's still known as the School of the Americas. Most of the courses revolve around what they call counterinsurgency warfare. Who are the insurgents? They are the poor. They are the people in Latin America who call for reform. They are the landless peasants who are hungry. They are healthcare workers, human rights advocates, labor organizers. They are seen as the enemy.
Served in the United States Army from 1968 to 1989. My very last assignment was as a political military officer and instructor at the School of the Americas from 1986 to 1989. I served with the U.S. Army officer who both developed the curriculum to teach torture techniques, physical abuse, false imprisonment, infiltration of unions. I have not gone through any transformation with regard to my knowledge and understanding of the role Latin American military played in their own country. Long before I got to the School of the Americas, I was well aware of what the Latin American military were in their own countries. And at the school, I was critical of Latin American military from day one.
Soldiers who have returned to their home countries and have killed tens of thousands of their people. A few of the well-known victims were church women from our country who were raped and killed by graduates of this school. Archbishop Oscar Romero, a great defender of the poor in El Salvador, killed while saying mass in church. And six Catholic priests of the Jesuit order along with that co-worker and her 15-year-old daughter, Selena. Those responsible trained at what we see as a school for terrorists, a training camp for terrorists, and we want that school shut down.
A lot of us know about the school of terrorism that has been paid for by the U.S. taxpayer ever since the end of the Second World War.
Here at the School of the Americas, we train people in low-intensity conflict. That is what terrorism is, conflict or war against the civilian population.
Americans have known surprise attacks, but never before on thousands of civilians. All of this was brought upon us in a single day, and night fell on a different world.
Terrorism wasn't just that plane falling from the sky. Terrorism is the knot I feel in my stomach. Every time I look up and hear a plane, that's terrorism. When I go to bed at night and I have nightmares like I've never had in my life, that's terrorism. It's in everybody here tonight.
Every one of the innocents who died on September the 11th was the most important person on earth to somebody. Every death extinguished a world.
We grieve and mourn for the 4,000 killed by the terrorists here in our country. At the same time, we cannot forget the 75,000 killed in El Salvador. The 200,000 killed in Guatemala. And the thousands who are being killed today in Colombia. Their lives are no less precious than the thousands killed by the terrorists here at home.
So long as training camps operate, so long as nations harbor terrorists, freedom is at risk, and America and our allies must and will not allow it. We will shut down terrorist camps, disrupt terrorist plans, and bring terrorists to justice.
Well, I hope that effort to put an end to terrorism is going to include terrorism wherever we find it, including right here in the United States, down at Fort Benning, Georgia. When I was participating in the Vietnam conflict, I felt good about the fact that I was there doing something that was necessary, trying to stop or contain communism in that part of the world. And then I finally came to realize what it was all about. It was all about money. In the Middle East now, in Central Asia, it's all about money. in the form of black gold, oil.
In Latin America. And they're here to protect the economic interests of the United States, the big corporations and the sweatshops. They provide the muscle for our country's foreign policy.
It's pretty obvious that the U.S. has a responsibility. And I feel as a citizen and as a veteran, I feel a responsibility, and it is the height of patriotism to express my distress with my U.S. government's policy.
To me, patriotism means a love of my country. It doesn't mean a love of my government. And I have been out of love with the activities of my government ever since I was awakened about 20 years ago to the barbarity of the Vietnamese War. I think the true love of our country is engaging in authentic and productive dissent. Without dissent, we don't have democracy.
On behalf of the SOA Watch, we say welcome, bienvenido.
Continue to teach the very things that were taught 10 to 15 years ago. What they actually do is give lip service to the idea of teaching democracy and human rights.
I recently had a trip down to Colombia. And it broke my heart. The same thing seems to be happening in Colombia that happened in El Salvador 10 years earlier. It's a counterinsurgency warfare and against the poor of the country. The School of America's half of the soldiers that we graduate are from Colombia.
We now begin the solemn funeral procession on the Golpe.
The fraternal friends, Ava, killed by graduates of the School of Americas.
When I came down to the protest in November, I brought my last army jacket. I wasn't quite sure what I was going to do with it. But when I got here, I decided that I wanted to put it on the fence as a sign to say I no longer believe that military solutions do anything but kill brothers and sisters of mine. I was thinking that it was kind of a coming home for both my jacket and for me. Laying my military history to rest, saying I can now move forward and say I'm going to be an advocate, I'm going to pick up with both hands nonviolence. And work with that.
I pay veterans today and thousands of us for speaking out against our country's foreign policy and this training camp of the terrorists that we run here on U.S. soil. This is what patriotism is all about.
Closing down schools like the School of the Americas, now called Western Hemispheric Institute for Security Cooperation, is very important. No. If that school was ever closed, and we become aware of other schools, which we will, we'll have to try to close those too.
Yes.
Officer, reactions about the video?
I have a question.
Yeah.
I've always understood, only from occasional news broadcasts, I've always perceived this as being a focus on the school of the Americas as it relates to human rights abuses in Central America. Yet, the thrust of this film seems to be ostensibly School of Americas, but it also seems to be U.S. involvement, and the message seems to be military might as a means towards preserving and establishing peace. So there's sort of an additional message, and you have, of course, most of your Central American soldiers are training at School of Americas, but not to the exclusion of virtually every other military school that exists, including West Point, for that matter, where there's always a number, albeit, of course, not the volume that we see there. So I guess my question is the desired end state School of the Americas, or is the desired end state the relationship with these regimes in Central America, or is the desired end state retooling the entire, if you will, U.S. military philosophy?
Anyone want to take a shot at that before I do? I think all of those things begin to, you know, cross over. And I think this particular movement, School of America's Watch, has tried to confine itself to closing the School of the Americas and confine itself to the Latin American issues. But many of the people who are involved in this movement also may be pacifists or, you know, have strong reservations about U.S. foreign policy in other places. So I don't know exactly how you can define, you know, what their objective is. I think this particular video, when they talk about terrorism, is an attempt to take our country's policy right now and show how it's internally inconsistent. In other words, we have this broad-based policy against terrorism, and when you apply it with the definition given, and probably any definition, there's a pretty strong argument can be made that we are, in fact, been training terrorists. The only difference between our training terrorists here and opposing terrorists in other places is that, you know, our national interests or our foreign policies are differently affected in those different areas. So, to the extent that that use of the terrorism begins to broaden the message that you hear, I think it's legitimate. I think the message is broader, but the people that run School of America's Watch, I think, have been careful not to dilute the message, to confuse it, and just to keep it focused on this particular school and let the next issue or the next school or those sort of things, you know, be another issue. But in a way, that's some of my prefatory comments where I would like to broaden this discussion a little bit. Because as they talk about patriotism, and I don't need to do it right now, I'd like to talk about School of America, but as they talk about patriotism, or as they play the battle hymn of the Republic behind Charlie Litke receiving the Congressional Medal of Honor, I think that image is there that patriotism is laudable and it is good and it is a positive thing. And I think School of America's Watch is playing on that right now to say true patriotism includes dissent. Anyone have a thought about whether patriotism is good or bad?
Well, I think on the issue of the internally inconsistent, that's the message that you said you're trying to get across. And I think there are people who are, on NPR, for example, there's a book they reviewed a lot a few months ago called Warrior Politics. I don't know if you folks heard those reviews, but it's by a fellow, I forget, Kaplan, I think is his name. He writes a lot for the Atlantic Monthly. His point of view is in order to have the values that we have in Western civilization, we have to practice a pagan ethos, which means using military means as often as necessary. And I think the School of the Americas would fit right in there. It simply means that, unfortunately, the world's not a very nice place, and we have to play rough. And if we train other people to do play, teach them how to play rough, we won't have to play rough on our own shores. And it's a very real politic type of an orientation, I think. And they wouldn't see that as internally. They would see that as inconsistent.
The administration would not see it as inconsistent.
Yeah, I think the people that run that go, yeah, well, it's a tough world, and we have to do these things, and we have to do them in secret.
What do some other people think? Is it consistent or inconsistent? Can you justify training people that commit abuses while at the same time talking about eliminating that?
How does the U.S. government justify it? I mean, do they deny that obviously they can't deny the actions that these people have taken, but do they couch it as it's not terrorism? I mean, because it seems so obvious looking at that, and obviously it's showing, I mean, they want to lead you to a certain conclusion. I'm not saying that they're lying, but how does the U.S. government respond?
Their response is a few bad apples don't, there's several. One of the first one is a few bad apples doesn't ruin the whole barrel. In other words, you have pointed out some people that have committed human rights abuses. We've trained 60,000, and so how do we know that a lot of those haven't made positive contributions to democracy in their countries? The second one is, if we weren't doing it, it would probably be worse than it is right now. In other words, we're at least having some kind of positive effect on the militaries down there. Another one is what this gentleman was referring to, that if Lieutenant Calley went to West Point and committed some human rights abuses during Vietnam, would you close down all of West Point? And so basically, they don't really directly meet the political or the economic proposition that Lauren just stated up here, that, you know, we are, if something is in our national interests, we're willing to justify it regardless of its morality. So those are the arguments they basically give. And as I stated those arguments, you can probably imagine what the responses are.
I guess I have a certain question. Who sends these individuals to the school? Is it the government? Is it the military? Is it both? Who's making the decision who goes to the school in the first place?
It's the countries who select the soldiers. In other words, right now, a great deal, I think a majority of the soldiers who are being trained right now are from Colombia. Colombia will select, you know, basic groups, how many they send at a time to come up here, and then we pay for their training and expenses.
So it's the Colombian government in conjunction with the Colombian military?
Yeah, probably the Colombian military would make, I suppose, select a particular people, but the Colombian government obviously is, the military is part
of it. So basically they're the people that are already in the Colombian military in the first place, correct?
Right.
So this is special training for them.
Right.
Okay, I guess I didn't quite have a handle on what's going on there.
But it, I think, if I understand correctly, it's the U.S. embassies that have sort of the final approval. So if the Colombian military, you know, selects a slate of candidates of their officers that they want to come to school, come to the U.S. to go to School of the Americas, then, you know, the U.S. embassy is also going to filter through those. And so that's sort of how the manifestation of our one way in which the U.S. maintains control over these candidates to make sure that, you know, somehow they're meeting our criteria. So in a sense, we also have a role in choosing these folks that, you know, the Army continues to claim are bad apples, but there's an awful lot of bad apples that have been, all of them, approved to come for this, you know, training by the U.S. government. And in addition, you know, I think the Army decides what the numbers are from each country. So if Colombia is, you know, where we're trying to put down an indigenous, you know, dissatisfaction right now in support of a repressive government, then, you know, we increase the numbers that come from Colombia or wherever.
There's the military, the United States government has what's called an extended international military education training programs, existed for years, and they go all over the world, and they teach everything from violence against women in Africa all the way to how to jump out of airplanes and combat operations and so on. And he's correct, it's the embassy is, in theory, so that they go through a selection process. There's sort of the intermediary or culling process.
And there is, to answer kind of your other question about this school, I mean, there's no question that there are many other schools, and most of them are overseas. And in fact, Congress came very close about a year ago to cutting off the funding to the School of the Americas. And when the debates were going down and the lobbying was taking place, the general of the Southern Command, who has authority over all of Fort Benning, and this school at Fort Benning, said that if it was closed, they would simply move it to Puerto Rico. And so there is a certain amount of impunity of our own democratic process, but I don't think anyone who's involved in this movement thinks that if this school closes, you know, all the ills will be attended. But there is, they've documented the fact that this school shouldn't be operating, and they're sticking with the focus of this school for School of the Americas Watch.
Well, I have another question. In the selection process, they're not selecting, basically the people that are sent are basically the children of the elite. They're the young up and up, is that what would be my guess, is that they would be the young up and coming officers. And they're not the worst of the worst, they're the best that the elite and governing or peoples in those countries have. Do you know that that's true, Peter, or have you heard that, or what?
Yeah, I can't state you chapter and verse, but I think that's true. You know, they primarily will send the officers in the upper crest of their militaries, and those militaries are usually well connected with the oligarchies and the economic power in those particular countries, so that the young people probably are, you know, better educated and come from the better families. Is everyone here, like, John, do you know what counterinsurgency means?
Not really.
Because I think that's important to understand. You've heard this counterinsurgency. It really means, an insurgency means like a dissenting or rebel or reactionary group within a country that's rising up to ask for a certain thing, whether it's, you know, more money, or they want an autonomous state, or they want better wages, or whatever they want. And so what the thrust of a lot of this training is to allow the military to fight not a war against you know, attacking country necessarily, but how to suppress an internal rebellion. So it would be not making war with another country, but making war on civilians who are organized in some rebel group. And since that's this one woman that kept talking from West Point, that was her point. If you're teaching low intensity conflict, you're basically teaching terrorism. Low intensity conflict is a tactic in counterinsurgency training, whereas you try and demoralize the civilians, the unions, the leaders of people's movements in order for them to not confront the government in power.
But isn't that country's government choosing what those targets are going to be?
Say more about your question so I understand.
Isn't that, like, let's pick on the Colombian government here. They're choosing how they're going to use those trained troops against what group. That's their decision. Theirs and their own military. It's, you know, maybe we have something to do with that, I don't know, but it's their own government choosing the targets, right?
Right.
Unless they've lost control of them.
Right. Maybe the greater question is, are we supporting the wrong regimes around the world?
Or are we trying to control the internal politics of other countries for our own benefit? In Colombia, I understand the situation is there is a huge pipeline that comes through Colombia. And the FARC, which is the insurgents, has control of that part of the country. And what they keep doing is blowing up this pipeline. And that's bringing, they've blown it up over 800 times. And our oil companies who own the pipeline are not at all happy about this. A lot of the people in Colombia aren't happy about all the fighting and everything like that too, but our country directly supports for years and years a particular regime that carries out policies. So it's very easy to say when we send them the Black Hawk helicopters, which we just sent five more down there, and we just sent another $3.1 billion last year to Colombia. And we're having this huge war on drugs down there. And now the Bush administration is trying to open up the use of that $3.1 billion for whatever Colombia wants to use it for, that we are actively getting involved in those internal disputes. So, yes, they are the ones who say, I don't know if we have advisors down there, but we often do. They're probably the ones that are saying, okay, now we're going to go attack this hamlet here next week. But the United States, by the training, the supplying money, and supplying supplies, can hardly say that they are not, you know, having a hand in what those policies are. How about patriotism? What do you think about Sid?
Well, I had a question that's related to that. It has to do with civil disobedience. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a fairly pervasive Christian attitude, I think especially in the U.S., of connecting being a faithful Christian to supporting the government or being a patriot. And I'm just wondering what your feelings are on that, if you agree with that, or... Because I've kind of spent about half my life in Canada and U.S., and I've noticed more of this kind of tying in religion with patriotism. Mm-hmm. And I think that stops a lot of people from even thinking about civil disobedience as far as for a cause, you know, if they feel strongly about something. And a lot of Christians may feel that might be against their faith to do something like that, you know, that they should support, you know, for faithful Christians, they should support government, but I don't know what you think about that.
Is talk, I would be glad to state my opinion. I'd like to hear other people's too. Is talk like this that's, you know, critical of our foreign policy, is it unpatriotic in people's opinion? And
I don't feel it is, and I guess I've gotten a completely opposite feel of what you have said as far as being a Christian and being patriotic or not. Feels like more, I meet more and more Christians that are saying, we're not going to just sit here and watch you know, people get killed or things that really go against a lot of the Christian philosophies. So I guess I'm seeing a building of a little anti-patriotism amongst the faith community. That could just be the faith communities where I'm at. I don't know if that may, you know, across the board or not.
Well, one thing, it seems to me like, what is patriotism? First you have to define what is patriotism. If patriotism means supporting the government, if it means, you know, it could mean two things. It could mean fundamentally believing what our country, what our government originally stood for, the, you know, rights of human beings, etc. Or does it mean supporting our government? If it means supporting our government, I'm like one of the most unpatriotic people around. Does that mean I'm not grateful to be someone who lives in a country where I have the freedoms that I do? No, not at all. I'm very grateful for that, and I do not take it for granted. But I think that the whole idea of being considered unpatriotic if you do not support the war in Afghanistan and possibly in Iraq is ridiculous, you know, in my opinion. I mean, I probably shouldn't say that so forcefully, but that's how I feel. And I've even had trouble with all the God bless America. My whole thing is, why isn't it God bless all human beings? You know, why are we special? We're killing people, and yes, many Americans were killed, you know, but it just goes against everything I feel as a Christian to be asked to support that in order to be considered Christian.
I've got a thing, just to muddy the waters a little bit here. This book by Coleman McCarthy just came out. He wrote for the Washington Post for a long time, and he's a famous teacher of peace. The name of the book is I'd Rather Teach Peace. He's been teaching peace around at high schools and prisons and juvenile detention centers and colleges for quite a while. And I've gotten a little fascinated with this idea of patriotism. And he says some things in here, if we got time to, I'm hungry, I skipped lunch, so we'll make sure we won't miss the second dinner. But it's kind of interesting. I mean, I think his bottom line is that patriotism, if you really think about what it is not good. And so if you start thinking about it that way, it doesn't get as confusing to talk about, you know, patriotism. Here's what, he quotes Tolstoy a lot, who was a soldier and a philosopher. And he says, in Patriotism or Peace, Tolstoy equates personal egotism with national egotism. Egomaniacs who are self-absorbed, who boast in subtle or obvious ways about their superiority, are seen as irrational. While collectively, a nation can do the same and claim it is patriotism. In foreign policy speeches, U.S. presidents routinely state America is the world's superpower. It is number one. It is the strongest nation on earth. Our nation, proclaims George W. Bush, is, quote, chosen by God and commissioned by history to be a model for the world. Madeleine Albright asserted, quote, if we have to use force, it is because we are America. We are the indispensable nation. And so then Tolstoy goes a little further and says, what produces war is the desire for an exclusive good for one's own nation, which is called patriotism. And so to abolish war, it is necessary to abolish patriotism. And to abolish patriotism, it is necessary first to become convinced that it is an evil, and that is hard to do. Tell people that war is bad, and they will laugh at you. Who does not know that? Tell them patriotism is bad, and the majority of people will agree with you, but with this proviso. Yes, patriotism is bad, but there is another patriotism, the one we adhere to. But wherein this good patriotism consists, no one can explain. Patriotism cannot be good. Why do people say that egotism can be good? Though this may be asserted more easily, because egotism is a natural sentiment with which man is born, while patriotism is an unnatural sentiment which is artificially inoculated in him. So everyone, every time we have one of these discussions, it's really been interesting to me, always wants to say, yeah, I see the evils of patriotism, but the part that makes me patriotic is different than that. You know, it's the love of the country. And so maybe there's truth to that, or maybe we should only love people, not countries.
Well, I think that you're confusing extreme nationalism with patriotism. There are two different things. You can take any word and make it anything you want it to mean, make it mean anything you want it to mean. When somebody tells me, or talks to me about patriotism, I do not confuse it with extreme nationalism, and that seems to me what is happening there. That's a different thing.
Well, I think the definition used by Tolstoy is probably a much more pervasive definition. Very, very common among Americans, among anybody you speak to in the world. I think that they love their country above themselves or above people in another country, and that's, you know, that's how they define patriotism. That's
I think however you define it, patriotism, however people may think of it, is at kind of an all-time high right now in the United States, at least if you will gauge it by the sale of American flags and the American flags that are on automobiles.
Oh, that makes you a real patriot when you fly it in your car.
Well, I think your original question had to do with people that were dissenting or showing civil disobedience, and was that a patriotic act, and are they, because of this, are they not patriots? Well, I think you have if you're an American, if you're a citizen of the United States, you have not only the right to dissent, you have the duty to dissent when you disagree with your government. That doesn't mean I agree with your film, but it means that those people who felt as strongly as they did should dissent. They have a duty to dissent. And I don't confuse that with patriotism.
But that is confused with patriotism frequently by the government or by folks that want to use patriotism to espouse certain government policies. And one of those more obvious examples right now is that President Bush is using the language of patriotism to drum up support for a number of his foreign policies, including, you know, presumably his plan to wage war in Iraq.
Oh, I fully agree with you, but it is our duty once again, and we have to remain informed.
But
you can't be fooled by things like that.
But I guess my point is that if that's foolery, then a major chunk of the country, of the public, is being fooled by that. And so one pretty common definition of patriotism is the one that, you know, President Bush espouses. And that, you know, and if you're not with him, at least with regard to his military policies in Central Asia and to some extent in other places as well, then you're not patriotic. And that, quite frankly, seems to be frequently the definition of patriotism that's understood in the rhetoric of, you know, of a number of other politicians in Washington. So in some respect, that's a real prevalent, if not perhaps the majority, kind of practical definition of patriotism in the country right now, seems to me.
But I agree with you, though. My opinion is that a true patriot is someone who actively works to participate in this democratic government. And definitely there's a confusion here in our society right now Your, in your initial question about patriotism, Christianity, and dissent, the first thing that flew through my mind was Martin Luther King. And King, of course, is a great example of an outstanding Christian, a patriot who dissented. And I believe he was really doing the American democracy. You know, he was a patriot in action, in my opinion. But I think we're in a really dangerous position right now.
People are scared now. People are scared still, secondary September 11th. But, and so what you hear, I mean, I agree that there's a visceral notion of patriotism, and I think it's compounded by this fear that Americans are still experiencing. But if you look at the strength of this democracy, the strength of it as it exists now, I mean, its shortcomings notwithstanding, if you look at its strength, particularly if you juxtapose it with other governments in the world, you'll find its strength is equated in the amount of dissent. I mean, it's correlated with dissent. The nature and the extent of the dissent, whether it be Dr. King or other people, whether it be consumer advocates who we now have flame retardant pajamas for children or gas tanks of car, I mean, what have you, the environment. I mean, that is all based upon dissent, and that dissent has translated out into a very strong form of government, one that has lasted for, what, 230 some odd years, which, if you compare it to other governments in the world, is a darn long time.
John Ashcroft was complaining about people who were dissenting during this time and accusing them of undermining the government because we're at a crisis during this time. And I have a quote by him, I don't have it right here, but he was talking about that kind of activity is really un-American.
Well, there are many things that John Ashcroft said that a lot of pause for thought.
Yeah. You know, part of the problem here is that this is all from the president's perspective, right or wrong, an extension of this presidential war power authority. I mean, that is his rationale, whether it be the people in Guantanamo Bay, whether it be a lot of this legislation that they're trying to pass that seems to be limiting civil rights. It is the notion, right or wrong, his premise is we are currently at war. The difference being from World War II, that it's a much more subtle war. It's a behind-the-scenes war and so on. And that becomes the premise from which these things go. I'm not a big John Ashcroft fan, actually, but to take it in a purely intellectual context for a second, I suggest that's probably the premise from which it derives.
Yes, sir.
I like your the way you gave the definition of patriotism at the beginning, and I think dissent has always been an incredibly important part of democracy that's made it strong, like you said earlier. And now after the session, I think dissent is also probably part of patriotism as well. But we lived in D.C. at the time of the 11th and all the ensuing points afterwards, and every weekend you could pick a protest to go to, whether it's about Latin America or anything like that. You'll find, in D.C., you'll find patriots from, you'll find American patriots of Guatemala and American patriots of wherever. They're all in D.C. working. And so there's protests every weekend, and every weekend you could pick a politician or an officer or anyone who would always say the quote that we're arresting, or insert, we're fighting, or we're warring so that you can have the right to disagree. And I thought, well, that's just a great way to put it, you know. You're basically glad that we're dissenting because you know it strengthens democracy. But then it seems that people that dissent have less and less power as the government has been changing over the last century, really. That those who dissent have less and less of an influence over the ulterior motives of those in power. And so I guess that's what I think of blind patriotism, what I mean by just like extreme nationalism is having the most danger is that those that do dissent have less and less influence. And that's what worries me about the direction that our government's going. And I also do see, like the majority, I think a lot of Christianity is becoming linked to extreme nationalism as of late. I mean, and it's all, I think it's perpetuated by things in the media. I think we're a very
different community up here at Holden, or those that come to Holden, than what is the larger population. It's just, it's really scary.
Yeah, I'm interested in that. You know, when I was growing up, went to Mayflower Congregational Church, which is now UCC in Minneapolis, and in every one of the places where there would be a cross in the church, I remember there was an American flag and a Christian flag on the two sides. I think there was some big controversy then, you know, years ago, or all the flags disappeared, both of them, but there was definitely that kind of visual link between the two. Anyone else see that?
That still happens all the time.
There's still American flags still in the church.
Are there?
Oh, yeah. I just, about the flag, I had talked to a couple of different friends recently on my way to Holden, in fact, where flags came up in the conversation. And one friend who is an absolute confirmed, has been a peace activist for 30 years, told me that he absolutely can't look at an American flag these days, and he says he just feels like he's looking at the swastika when he sees an American flag. He's that strongly, you know, in his feelings. Another friend was telling me, you know, we just have to take the flag back as a symbol again of real democracy instead of this fascism or whatever it is. And I don't know, I'm divided on that, but I kind of hate to throw out the word patriot. I kind of hate to decide, as I think that what you meant seems to suggest, that patriotism is all bad. I've always liked that there's a Jackson Brown song, and I don't know if any of you know it, the I Am a Patriot. Have you ever heard that song? I've always thought of it as a real affirmation. You know, I am a patriot, but I dissent.
Yes. Well, I just want to make a quick comment. You know, look at our founding fathers. They were traitors against Great Britain. What are they called? Patriots. It depends on what side you're on.
Right.
And they were dissenters. Mm-hmm. They were dissenters against the government.
It seems that we have consensus on the fact that the important part is to be an active citizen in the democratic process and what you call them or whatever. And maybe that part of this whole concept has to do with your relationships to your country, your faith, those sort of things, whether or not you want to call yourself a patriot or not. I experienced the same thing, ironically, in this movement to get back to School of America. It's the first time before they did their first action, I was down there consulting with them, and there was a huge battle. There were about 12 people who were hardcore peace activists, resistance community, and several of the people wanted to have the flag out there to reclaim it as theirs and the original values. And several of the people said it has become such a symbol of oppression that if they were going to have a flag out there at that first demonstration, they were going to leave the group. And you saw, they did take a picture of a flag that someone had in the march here this last year. Anyone have a closing comment of any great wisdom? Thank you for coming. Jonathan's about ready to go here in 4 minutes, so we need to get out of his way. I appreciate you sharing your opinions and talking about these often tricky and personal issues.
Thank you. I have a couple little folders for School.